Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Blog Talk, Three Muses and a Universe. This is Mary Field. I'm here with Tierney Sadler and Sheila Cash, and we're going to talk about your personal evolution.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is it, and where shall we dive in?
Well, I asked a listener just a little while ago this morning what he might like to hear about, since our topics are very spontaneous. We often come up with them just seconds before we air live. And so he suggested that he would like to hear about how our personal beliefs have evolved since childhood and any epiphanies that changed your way of thinking or your way of seeing the world. What were the events or insights or thoughts that gave you a new way to perceive the world?
What a wonderful question or subject matter, because it is like, it reminds me of a bunch of raindrops dropping when it rains and how they bounce up into those little peaks. It's like some things hit us and peak up like that, and it takes us to a completely different level, and
yeah.
Other things just fall flat. But
I definitely have a story.
All right. Let's hear your story.
Okay. So my story is I had already kind of started down the path a little bit, but, you know, I mean, it was kind of slow going. I wasn't even really trying all that hard or anything like that. But when I was 25, my father was murdered. And he was murdered by my stepmother for the insurance money. And it was a very stressful time and all of that. And in kind of thinking, how does this happen? How does this come about? Why would this, my father was a man. He spent 36 years in the Air Force. He was a veteran of 3 wars. He was a kind soul, and when my mother died, he met an opportunistic woman who was a black widow and had quite possibly done this before. And so how does that happen, and why does that happen?
Mm.
And in thinking about it, I saw that there was no way, you know, before he married this woman, all 6 kids went in to talk to him. He was an intimidating man to talk to. He was a 2-star general. And we all went in and talked to him and said, are you sure you know what you're doing? Because there's something wrong with this woman. And he sent us all away. There was nothing anybody could do to stop this. And when I started thinking there was nothing anybody could do to stop this, I started seeing the way that these 2 people were careening towards each other all their lives. Before my mother died, she said to my brother, she said, watch out for the next woman that your father marries. Like my mother knew, you know?
Wow.
And so I saw this whole sort of cycle of that there must have been something between these 2 souls,
mm-hmm.
and that there must have been a reason why these 2 souls came together, and that there must have been some sort of agreement or predetermined something before he ever even came to this earth that would tie him to this woman and that he would find her. You know what I mean? All the different circumstances that had to happen for him to find a sociopathic felon, and be convinced in his mind, you know, this man of stature, to be convinced in his mind that this woman was something other than she appeared to everybody else. I mean, of course, we didn't think she was going to murder. You know, you never think that, but there was something off about her, and he didn't see it. And so then also in the course of this, when I got the call that my father had been shot,
in that moment, I knew exactly who did it. I knew exactly what it was all about. Everything all made sense to me, you know. And there was a moment also in the investigation, and there was a magazine that was doing a story, and they said, "Do you know how your father met this woman?" And I thought about it. I said, "You know, the funny thing is he's told all three of his daughters different stories about how he met her." And I said, "I think he was trying to cover up something." And I said, "He used to sit there and watch the and read those personal ads in the back of Regardies or in the back of Washingtonian magazine," is what it was. And it was a reporter from Regardies that was asking me. And they used to have a lot of personal ads in the back of Washingtonian magazine. And they researched it, and that's exactly how they met. So I also had to think to myself, how did I know that? You know what I mean? How did I know that there was something fishy there? And so that whole situation changed a lot for me. It opened my eyes spiritually to so many things. And at that point, my spiritual journey kind of took off where it had been flagging before.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That is quite an opening. If we talk about mm-hmm. the raindrops, that's the chunk of hail that comes
yeah.
down and just like splashes your whole life
mm-hmm. yeah.
out
mm-hmm.
of its current location.
Yeah.
And causes you to have to fill it with something new and to explain it.
Yeah.
Because I think the whys of those, the WHYS of those, is what really leads us. Sometimes I think these questions that we have are like a floating feather that we keep trying to catch, you know, and it makes us run all over the place. And it was never the feather. It was the location that feather led us to.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, there are six of us kids, and we all went through the exact same experience, but it imprinted each of us differently. And I would say I'm probably the only one that it opened up a big spiritual thing for.
Wow.
You know?
That's
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah. So, and I can't exactly say for other people, but I know that a lot of people carry a lot of people in the family, and this was 1988, so carry resentments and anger and all of that stuff with them. For some reason, well, this is a part that I didn't say, for some reason I was spontaneously able to forgive that woman and not carry that with me, not carry that hate with me.
Yeah.
Like the rest of my family did. And so that was another revelation for me to let go of something, and especially as quickly as I did. It was just
amazing.
All very unlike me at the time.
Yeah.
So it was,
and it shows like this deeper thing, like maybe you forgiving that was something you needed to complete from another life as well.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I can see now where if we choose our parents before we come here, or if we choose our parents' experiences before we come here, I can see that if I was intended to have this revelation happen to me, now I can see why I chose the parents that I did, because there was going to be something that would shake me up.
Well, mm-hmm. not only, you know, might you have chosen your parents, and I do have a different take on that, but what is really clear is that you chose to forgive. So that
yeah.
was a conscious choice that you made happen, which, you know, is obviously not easy. It's not as if, oh, I'll just choose
yeah.
to forgive. I mean, there's so much more, so many layers of depth underneath that choice. But you did make that choice.
Yeah.
And
out of the blue, I was definitely a resentful person. I was definitely in the same frame as my brothers and sisters, who were all like, string her up by her toenails, cut her, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I was definitely there before that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that there, just a split between me and my siblings in that regard occurred at that time.
Mm-hmm. Have you been able to forgive people ever since, or have you come up against other situations
I'll tell you, I can forgive big things. I have a hard time forgiving little things.
Oh.
You cut me off in traffic, you're dead to me.
You know, it makes a lot of sense, though.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, Sheila, did you have a defining moment? I know what.
Well, because I hadn't really thought about it. Wasn't sure that we were going to, you know, have this topic. But I feel like really my whole life there were challenges that I was sort of constantly processing, even from childhood. You know, my mother was one who was a nonconformist and still is. And really, I'm very grateful for that because she had a very broad sense of thought. It, you know, going back to the 40s, 50s, and 60s, where our viewpoints were very myopic culturally and, you know, in the state where I grew up. You were sort of pressured to believe certain things and very sort of limited beliefs, but she was one to really stretch the edges and the boundaries of belief. And so I was raised to always go broader into thought and you know, even your elementary school, you know, playground spats or things like that, or you know, friends that might stab you in the back, you know, or two-faced, and even from those relatively minor conflicts, I always thought a broader point of view. So one of the running themes that kept coming up in my life was noticing the so-called, in quotation marks, bad things that people would do, observing, you know, all kinds of, you know, lies or cheating or backstabbing or hypocrisy. I was very aware of all of that from the earliest age. And so my question was always, why do bad things happen to good people and why do seemingly good things happen to bad people? And, of course, there was a book that was written about that. Which I don't think for me even quite got there as well. But as I went into processing over some very, again, quote, bad things that others had done to me, it really reached a pinnacle at one point, particularly in my marriage, where I needed to stretch far above and beyond to be able to understand. And eventually I did get there. And when I really went into very deeply the concept of each of us being mirrors for each other and that we are of one mind, I also value and treasure the ego and the individuation that we bring to the world too, but it's playing with those other perspectives that can really bring you to a place of understanding. And for me, the understanding is the resolution. You know, some people like certain kind of step-by-step ways of, you know, just say changing their beliefs and what have you. For me, it's really just about understanding the human condition and understanding that I'll speak for myself, that I was raised in a culture, again, not by my mother, but within the culture that said, there were certain virtues, there were certain truths, there were certain ways, you know, that you were supposed to be, and all of this was governed by a divine authority. But when I went above those perspectives to say, but what's really going on, you know, and who's really overseeing this, if anyone, and what's the reality here? That, for me, was the processing that led me to the understanding, that led me to peace anti-balance. And what I'm really trying to say is superseding beliefs altogether will bring you to the place of reality. Because beliefs are always just one shred, one slice of perspective. And it's hard to understand anything about the world when you're only looking at one angle of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's more of a broad, generic answer to this. And I do have a lot of those stories. Maybe I'll think of something else. But as my example, to me, I look at the pattern of my whole life and how it unfolded and where it led me to evolve in my thinking.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mary, what about you?
Well, I would say with me, I have always felt like an odd bird, and I think all three of us have felt that way. But when I was born, I've pieced this together in my adult life, but when I was born, I had the umbilical cord wrapped around my neck, so I was a blue baby, and they thought that I was brain damaged, and who knows, maybe I am. So for my first year of my life, they thought I was, at the time, the term was mentally retarded because of being without oxygen for so long. I don't know, now that I look back, since that's technically a death experience, near death is what they call it, but it's really an experience with death. I don't know if that's what created what I experienced as a child, but I remember very distinctly being 3 or 4 years old, and the babysitter had taken me with her to babysit this other group of kids. And I was so small, I remember seeing my, you know how kids have like flat knees until their knees develop. I remember sitting there looking at my knee and being conscious of forgetting why I came here. And I got very upset because I knew that I had come here. I have had a memory of being on this lap of this divine presence, going through map books, looking, saying, yes, I want that, I want that. And then I saw the map of the world, and I remember pointing right at D.C., and I knew I had to be here. I knew I had to be the fifth child, have my hair color, and a bunch of other things. And I was in the sandbox going, oh, no, I'm forgetting. I felt like it was being pulled out of my head. I believe everyone has that same experience. I am only different in that I remember it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as time went on, I knew there was more to that. I had all kinds of experiences. I remember having the little Dell books of palmistry and tarot, and I asked for the I Ching for my 8th birthday, and I still don't know how I thought of that. So I would have these experiences in dreams, and waking time, I felt like I was always like, I would have these episodes where I was dissociated from my body, and I would ask other people, you know, what was going on. I would have memories of past lives, and I was always met with, like, concerned looks, like something was wrong with me, so I just buried it. But I always knew that there was something more to this, and it's like being in a room where you know, or an old West City where the storefronts are propped up, you just know that this isn't completely real, and you're looking for something. And I think it was The Exorcist when I was 14 that really got this started. I got so terrified that led me on a 3-year odyssey of walking through my 40 days in the desert battling my demons. I got so terrified. I read the Bible multiple times. All I found was more confirmation of fear in it, and it terrified me. And I looked for a solution. I looked in psychology. I looked in all these different things, and I was still a young mother, a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and my husband had a mental condition, schizophrenia, and he ultimately hung himself. He didn't die. He's in a nursing home today, but he hasn't been able to communicate since 1981 when that happened. Well, I feel that those, all that combined and the hardships, I was working a waitress job, and the defining moment, the moment that blew the lid off everything, was one of my customers that came in every day was reading a book by Jane Roberts. And I walked up and I said, oh, what are you reading? And he mentioned something about a consciousness type of word. And I just knew that that was the answer. And I told him, I know I'm looking for something. I don't know what it is. I know it's not in psychology. I studied medical textbooks and genetics. I tried to look there. I tried looking in religion. I tried everything, and I couldn't find it. And he goes, I think this book might be what you're looking for. This was 1982, or 81 or something, whatever year that was. And he put... he left the book for me. The next day I came into work, and it was Jane Roberts on the cover, you know, channeling. And after the Exorcist thing and dealing with all my fears, I was scared. But I finally read it, and I read the words, your beliefs create your reality. And it was literally like something blew my head apart. And I would say that is where my truth came to me through.
Well, and it's interesting listening to both of you because I think of other parts of my story. Like I had my mother was a war bride from Great Britain. She came over here. She married a soldier, and he abused her, and she divorced him. And then a number of years later, she met my father. My father was Catholic, and his family kind of, let's just say, I guess probably kindly is cold to the marriage thing because my mother was obviously a sinner and a floozy because she had been married once before. And so because my parents didn't like that assessment, they both gave up the church, and they told us the whole time we were growing up that they had graduated from church and no longer had to go, but that we had to go.
I love it. That's true.
That said, I've never had to go to church a day in my life. Every other kid in the family had to go to church, had to go to Catholic school, all of that, and I was spared that. My mother spared me.
She didn't make you go?
I never had to go, and it all kind of stopped, you know, by the time I became 6 or 7 and would have gone anyway.
That's so funny because the same thing happened to me.
Yeah, but. And I would stay home with her, and I was curious about certain things, you know, teach me a prayer, and, you know, and she taught me the now I lay me down to sleep prayer. And what I noticed throughout my life is that she would go into her room, and there was a little red velvet book that she would open up, and she would read all the time, and it was the Rubaiyat, which is a book full of devotional Western poetry. It's not a religious book, but it's a book it's about love, and you could think that it was love between a man and a woman, but you could also think it was divine love. And she would read this book all the time. And so I just got a sense from her that there was something else other than this, other than, you know, the religions that would surround, you know, a middle-class kid in the 70s, which would be Christianity. There was something other than Christianity going on out there.
I think my little wedge was my mother would always say, everything happens for a reason. And I know Carolyn Mace does not care for that because, at any rate, a lot of the beliefs are, like, rigidly. But I found that that was one of the most helpful things because that made me look for the reason behind things instead of just saying, this happened to my husband or this thing happened at work. It is, there's a reason for that. Okay, let me see what that reason is. And I think that created my seeking mind because my mother gave me that. And it shows you how all it takes is that one little word or that phrase.
Exactly.
You know? And you were saying your mother didn't make you go to church either.
Well, we did. In the very early years, she had been raised Seventh-day Adventist. And he had been raised Church of Christ. So between the two, there were some church years. but there was a lot of hypocrisy going on with the church, with an affair between this one and that one, and some embezzling with the church secretaries and the thing. And so my mother, being the realist that she is, didn't overlook those things the way others did. Now, she was never one to start a fight or to tattle and turn people in. But she was very real with herself in terms of saying, you know, this is not for me. Now that doesn't mean that she had to throw the baby out with the bathwater, because, you know, others might have just chosen another church, gone to another church and what have you. But because she treated every belief that way, you know, again, going broader and looking at the bigger picture, we were about probably six when I stopped going to church. I continued to go with friends, and I went to summer camps, you know, the week-long camps at churches, and then explored on my own going into Buddhist temples, Hindu, Unitarian. Raised my kids in Unitarian church, the two older kids, and like you, Terry, and like me being the youngest of the first three of us, my youngest also didn't. She I think quit in preschool, and we laugh about it now for various reasons. But and then married into Judaism. So I never converted, but I was very, you know, so I was very open-minded about seeing what any and every religion had to hold. I wasn't anti-religious at all. I like to see, you know, quite the opposite. I like to see what is it that each offers. But then at the same time, I am also aware of the limiting perspectives in each one as well. Mm-hmm. But so I did have some early church years,
yeah.
And those were quickly nipped in the bud.
Well, I had to teach my kids. I read them, like, summaries of all the religions and told them they really have to figure out their own, because it's a way of life. It's not a belief, you know.
Right.
But, wow. I think we ought to do several more shows on this, because, honestly, it is so inspiring to hear how someone's spiritual journey,
yeah,
and all that they went through to get there. I find that more educating than somebody to even give the most wise doctrine, you know, just to hear. That's why Christ and Buddha spoke in parables, these stories, and the Native Americans speak in storytelling, is because these make it real.
Mm-hmm. I feel like... I mean, some are born into, you know, open-minded cultures and families, and others are not.
Yeah.
But the overriding factor of being able to stretch beyond whatever it is that you were raised with in the early years is, I believe, a spiritual courage to overcome the fear that's instilled, because in almost any tradition, there's always a fear that's instilled about going outside of your religion, your culture, whatever it is, east, west, around the world. It's always about wanting to keep you. So it's about overcoming fear,
yes.
The fear of, you know, eternal damnation.
Yes. Well, it's interesting, too, though, because you said that you were... we actually did have, I did actually kind of have it instilled in me to distrust religion, because we were bastards, right? If my parents' marriage wasn't legitimate, then they had six children out of wedlock. So we were kind of raised with that, with what religion can do to you, kind of thing.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And so part of my journey has come to a place to be able to actually feel about Christians like I do about everybody else in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's
well, there's a lot of, you know, my ex-mother-in-law, who I really adore, always talked about that we sort of make religions convenient. You know, my grandmother, said the Seventh-day Adventist, said that my mother's family could never go, you know, couldn't listen to music, couldn't go to the movies. But when she needed time for cleaning on Saturday, she'd give my mother
quarter and see the movie.
Yeah.
So.
Well, everybody tune in next time because I think we still have a lot more to share about this. So anyway, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to having you join us next time.
Bye.
Bye.